I always have a red flag about this, and it's so counterintuitive being a real estate agent.
If you're a broker out there doing off plan, make sure you get evidence, independent evidence, of that you did the deal. Hello and welcome to the Two Fat Brokers podcast or videocast, depending on how you're watching this. I am Ben from Abu Dhabi.
Barney from Dubai.
And today we're going to be talking about the murky world of developers.
So murky.
There's a lot of developers now since 2020. A lot of, I'd say, popped out the woodwork might be a mean way of describing them. But obviously, it's important for people to know who are the good ones to work with and who are the bad ones. We won't be naming any names, but we're going to give you some tips on how to identify the better developers to work with. So, Barney, do you want to start? Give me a sign of a good developer.
I mean, I think you cannot deny time in the market. You know, the market will always have a way of weeding out the naughty ones. And, you know, if you're buying from a developer that has good pedigree, Imar, people like that, Nikhil, you know, these guys have a pedigree of delivering projects on time and to the specification that they have given you, give or take.
How can you tell whether a developer delivers on time or not? Because obviously, someone like Imar's obviously got a fantastic reputation. You know, comparing them with someone else, how would you be able to tell if they deliver on time or not? Something I've always thought about doing in Abu Dhabi is maybe kind of like having a list of projects when they say it's going to be delivered and when it's actually delivered.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of have a look at like that, because there have been some. And so Aldar is our version of Imar, you know, been there since almost the beginning and, you know, generally has a pretty good track record for delivery. But sometimes, you know, for whatever reason, they deliver late.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that's always important to caveat, developers are always late. Developers are always late. You know, there is, I can't think of any developer that's handed over on the day they said they were going to.
We had,
you
know, we had one in Abu Dhabi that was early.
Really?
Yeah. So
just fall down after about 3 weeks.
I don't know. So they had this payment plan and they were going out to the buyers 3 months before saying, we want your next payment now because we've hit our milestone 3 months early. And all the buyers were like, what? Like, yeah.
Was it
like,
so, milestone linked?
Because it's milestone. Yeah, it has to be milestone linked in Abu Dhabi. But obviously you give an indicative time of when the milestones are due. So when you're buying off planet, in case you don't know, so your payments should be linked to milestones, which are verifiable by, you know, the government. So
and the government posts them online. So, it's qualified.
Because what used to happen would be they'd be linked to time. So the developer would be way behind or wouldn't even start. And they'd come to you with their handout saying, we want our next payment. So this developer hit a milestone 3 months earlier than they had thought. It was verified, and so they went out, you know, to the buyer.
Good for them. Yeah. Good for them. Did they deliver quality?
It's only being handed over now, so we'll see.
Have you not been to see it?
No.
Okay.
I'm not really a going out seeing property kind of guy.
You like to sit in your ivory tower and throw potatoes at people.
cake. I throw cake.
Of course. Let them eat cake. Okay, so, you know, I guess...
So handover on time.
Yeah, handover on time and a pedigree. But also, you know, when you go back to the pedigrees that you're researching, keep in mind, not long ago, there was a global financial crisis and there was, you know, a case in point. There's a company that's gone on to do very, very good things, Omniat. I'm a big fan of what they're doing. However, their flagship development when they came into the luxury market was the Opus designed by Zaha Hadid. Because of the global financial crisis and, you know, other sort of mitigating reasons, they were a princely 6 years behind time to hand over.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there are these anecdotal points. I keep on saying anecdotal. Why do I keep doing that? There are these
nice
outriders.
Word.
It is. Rolls off the tongue. There are these outriders of, you know, examples that, you know, you may need to sort of disregard. But if you're buying from a developer that has a consistent track record of being 2, 3, 4 years behind schedule, you really need to be taking a second look at them.
But also, you also have to look at, you're right. When things are being built, sometimes a developer will value engineer them because the market, you know, is low. Oh, we've had developers, you know, very solid developers in Abu Dhabi, you know, when the market's good, they're delivering great, great product and it's nicely finished and all that kind of stuff. When the market's bad, you know, they need to sell, they sell cheap, your building material cost is still the same, your land cost is still the same, so they end up, you know, value engineering some projects, you know, to still make money. And so some of the projects that they deliver are going to be lower quality.
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be a method of holding their feet to the fire and saying, you promised me you would deliver this type of marble, this type of sanitary wear.
You know, because do that realistically?
Let's say you launched a project 2 years ago. Now the cost of building materials and the cost of porcelain and the cost of everything has gone up exponentially in that time. The developer almost has to value engineer it, or at least reduce what they said that they were going to give you.
Or make less profit.
Ah, but who does that? It's like saying the insurance companies need to just wear the cost of the floods. They don't. All insurance companies have upped their premiums because of the floods. You know, the profit is the divining rule.
Yeah. So delivering on time is a great example, or delivering not too late, let's say, is a great example of a good developer. I think when you're buying secondary market, you need to basically make sure that you take a look at the finishings on the project, because even good developers, they deliver some rubbish depending on the pressure that they're under. Are there other ways where you can see, okay, this developer, you know, not say he's a bad developer. Raises questions about, you know,
I mean, I think you've hit a really good point. You know, if you're going to buy from a developer that has end product in the market, go see it. Make sure that they've delivered something that is, you know, what they promised.
So here's one: big cash discounts, always a red flag to me. In off plan, you pay 100%, get 30% off. You get that in Dubai?
Yeah, but not that much. But yeah, really? You do get a discount if you buy bulk or if you buy full cash.
Bulk, fine. But all cash up front?
It's a cost of money though, isn't it? I mean, you should give a discount if you're paying, you know, but 3 million dirhams up front.
Yeah. But, I mean, sure, but the big developers don't do that, right? I mean,
no, they do.
But how big?
10%? Not 30.
Yeah, so big cash discounts has got to be a red flag.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're just doing a standard like purchase of one or two units, then you shouldn't be getting big discounts. But if you're buying, you know, half a building, they're going to give you a nice discount.
Yeah, but a 30 or 40% discount? I mean,
no, not that much.
So development profit should be around about 40%. You know, roughly speaking,
a developer should
be making 40% profit because, you know, they've got a borrow the cash to build the thing, you know, they're taking a lot of risk. They've got to, you know, do a lot of stuff. So they're most of them will try and build in 40% profit. So if you're automatically offering a 40% discount, I feel like, you know,
that can be masked as a, what do you call it? Guaranteed ROI over a period of time. So you buy from a developer and they guarantee you an ROI of 8% over the next 5 years, you know, because they'll rent it out for you. And, you know, all they've done there is build in that 35% over 5 years into the price.
True. So, but that kind of thing's a red flag for me. Any red flags for you if you like see a developer offering something, doing something?
I always have a red flag about this, and it's so counterintuitive being a real estate agent, but developers offering massive commissions to real estate agents.
Great point.
Yeah. You know, why are you paying someone 10% to sell your product? Your product should probably be, you either reduce that off your selling price. Well, that's what I would do. I would just reduce it off my selling price. You're not going to, you're doing two things. You're playing into the hands of real estate agents who just chase the bag. And I'm going to, you know, these guys, they're just going to pump my project because I'm paying them 10%. And two, you're massively devaluing what it is that you're selling because you're going, I'm so desperate. I need to pay these guys extra money to flog my dead horse.
I mean, I have a little bit of sympathy for a developer who starts to sell their project and then the market falls away from under their feet.
Yeah, but
they can't discount the project. because they can't then sell it. You know, I sold this for 2 million and now I'm going to try sell it for like 1.5. The guy who bought it 2 million will be absolutely blooming furious. So you've got to sell it at 2 and then you've got to pay the broker, you know, 10% and pump the marketing.
But that's
and
the risk. You don't feel sorry for the guys who are making 40% on their dollar, do you? Like, you know, you don't feel sorry for the guys who are making it work. You feel sorry for the guys who don't make it work, but that is their inherent risk.
Yeah, but I think it looks bad to a developer if you're discounting your project, right?
Yeah,
it does. People like, well, and extra broker commission can be a hidden way that you discount your project so that the buyers don't think, oh, wow, they're just like...
They're not discounting, are they? They're just making people work harder on it.
Effectively, because they're making less money out of it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I would be careful of developers that... I'm not careful. I would be sensitive towards developers who increase their prices exponentially as well. Although that's a market trend. No, I forget I said that. I'm just sort of case it anecdotally again.
Yeah.
There is a developer that has increased the cost of their one of their apartments by, what are we talking? By 70%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Overnight. It came from the chairman.
Well, I mean, if for example, you've got, you know, 100 three beds and you've sold, you know, 70 of them on day one, you might want to pump the cost of the other 30 because, you know, there's obviously a huge market there and you want to make profit. And, you know, and developers do this in phases, right? Phase one's always the cheapest phase, then two, and then three, and then four. And they can see, okay, well, maybe phase three didn't sell as well as we thought. Phase four is going to be the same price as phase three.
Yeah.
You know, and so you're just, you know, adjusting it that way.
Yeah, I mean, it's a smart way of doing business.
Yeah, but another red flag for me would be really funky payment plans. So we get these like 1% a month kind of payment plans.
Oh, I've heard of that.
Yeah. No deposit payment plans. Something that's like too, you know.
Everybody knows the payment plans are linked to construction because you're basically funding the construction of the project. Right? How do these guys do it? I mean, 1% a month?
Yeah.
How are you funding that project? Bank money.
You're borrowing money from the bank, yeah.
At 12% interest a year.
I mean, it shouldn't be that high, but it's definitely very high. It's higher than what people pay mortgages. So,
yeah, for sure.
I mean, it used to be.
But you're not supposed 6%. To be able to do that, I didn't think. I didn't think you could finance.
You'll need a lot of equity in there as well. The bank won't finance the whole thing for
no,
you.
Of
you'll need
not.
Equity, and they'll need to look at sales. So in a way, you know, this is like, you know, if you pre-sell a project like it's sold, the bank will give you great terms because it knows it's going to get paid and it's going to get built. So, you know, maybe if you're offering this funky payment plan and you can go to the bank, listen, we sold everything. Because the bank doesn't pay you, obviously, until you start putting spades in the ground. And most of this off-plan stuff gets sold before, you know, a brick's put on another brick. It's a good way to go and say, give us cheap financing.
I mean, when the market wasn't as buoyant as it is now, we were seeing, you know, 5-year post-handover payments.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not a bad thing. I don't think that's a bad thing.
That wouldn't be a red flag
for me,
for sure.
Times and measures, right? You know, people were, they still wanted to sell off-plan projects.
Yeah.
And this was a really attractive way of doing it because you're getting the house and you've paid 60%, or you're getting the apartment, you paid 60%, and then your tenant, if you're an investor, just pays the rest. So you're ostensibly paying 60% of the value.
Well, I mean, depending on the post-handover plan, but I take your point. Yeah, and that kind of thing wouldn't be a flag for me, but things like no deposit, 1% a month, you know, other stuff like that, where they're making it very easy for you to get in. That would make me nervous about the developers, like, thirsty, you know, going to make it as easy as possible for you to buy. Another thing is when they're kind of messing around with selling you the car parking space separately. You know, that kind of thing. That also, you know, makes me think, this guy, you know, this doesn't seem right. Also, people selling micro apartments, like, you know, studios, like the 25 square meters and stuff like that.
What's wrong with that?
It just makes me nervous.
It's affordability. It's an affordability play.
Listen, I don't want to dump on it from a great height. And there's a lot of European cities who have these micro, you know, apartments, and it's necessary in high density locations where you can't build a lot of property.
Oh, but it's necessary in a market that needs more entry level real estate.
I mean, yeah, for sure, for sure. So that would also be a red flag. And of course, companies who are selling stuff like, you know, very cheaply, where there's thin margin, you know, you got to be very sure that they're going to deliver that, because a little bit something goes wrong and, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot of that is obviously the government's done huge or taken huge steps in ensuring that buyers are far more protected. I mean, you know, we're no stranger to the stories of 2007, when 2008, when the crisis happened, people left plots of land having received 30% of the cash, never built anything and left the country. And there was nothing these owners could do about it. And then they were still receiving messages, letters from the developer saying, you owe us the next installment because contractually anyway, those are the horror stories. The government now, obviously, you know, every development has to be put in escrow. Every development has to have been scrutinized by the government. You know, there's the security you have over buying off-plan property is exponentially higher than it was when we used to hear all the stories.
Mm. Another red flag. I've got a lot of red flags.
You do have a lot of red flags. You're a bit grumpy today, I have to admit.
Yeah.
Why are you so grumpy?
Maybe. I don't know.
Need a hug?
It's warm outside. Maybe it's the weather. Another one is poor after-sales care. I hate that.
Yeah?
So...
Yeah. But they've got your money. They don't owe you anything after that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole point, is if they don't care whether you buy again or not. It's basically, I've sold you this unit. You are going to email this email address. You will never receive a response. you can call as much as you like. No one's ever going to call you back.
It's too late by then, Ben. They've got your money.
But that's it. Companies, and someone gave me the statistics on EMAR, I think, where 30% of their sales are to repeat buyers. And that's a great statistic, you know, whereas other developers, you know, they sell once, people have such a horrible experience, even if they get, you know, a quality, you know, product at the end of it, they have such a horrible experience during the 3 years it takes to build the thing, or six, depending on how it is, that they never buy from them again. And I think
it's kind of lost. Who's done that really well. I mean, the good customer service, not the bad, is a chap called Rami Malhas and Andrew Lemon. They built Le Rev in the Marina. That was the address to live in the Marina. They've now
What's
built
company?
Extreme Vision.
Extreme Vision.
Extreme Vision.
Oh.
Yeah, not a great name for a company, but the product that they deliver is fantastic. And what they are really good at is selling to current or repeat customers. Mm. You know, they then built Volante. They sold Volante to a lot of the people who lived in Le Rev because they appreciated the quality and the product that they gave them in Le Rev. They then bought in Volante. And he's now sold them onto another project. So he's done the pair of them have done really, really, a really good job in retaining people that have bought into their ethos and reselling them next projects.
Yeah, and that's capitalism. And that's how it
that's customer
be.
Service. I mean, you don't get that kind of constant financial commitment from people that you haven't serviced really well.
Yeah, true. And that's how it should be. But unfortunately, because you get a reasonably high turnover of population in, there's new people coming all the time, there will be those companies who just want to sell you one thing and that's it. You know, like the financial investment guys, they just want to sell you a thing and they're not really interested in building a relationship with you and, you know, and meeting you and selling you kind of more stuff over time.
Mm.
It's like, you know, I'm going to not treat you like a sucker is probably a bad way to put it, but I'm just going to, you know, make my money off you and then that's it, I'm out of here.
And
countries like the UAE, unfortunately, make that easier because... You know, there are people coming in all the time who don't know, you know, a lot about it. And so, you know, reputation doesn't mean as much as it should in a high turnover market like this. Whereas obviously if you were in the UK, you know, you could get a bad reputation very easily and people wouldn't touch you with a barge
pole. I tell you, I have dealt recently with one of the biggest developers in England. And from a broker's perspective, I have never dealt with such a terrible company in all my life. In all my life, these guys, I have been handed. So I sold a very their most expensive apartment in one of their most prestigious blocks, and I have been given the runaround for my commission from the get-go, and that was nearly 2 years ago, and I still haven't received it all, even though they completed on it 4 weeks ago.
Received some, but not all?
Yeah, the way they do it in the UK, oh God, I hope they don't pick this up here. They pay you a percentage, or they pay you 50% when your client has paid 20%, and then they pay you the other 50% when the project is complete and the guy's transferred. We call it completed in England, but in Dubai we call it transferred.
So some of these developers who do 1% a month, obviously they haven't got enough money to pay you your commission.
Oh yeah,
so,
of course.
Yeah, so they pay you half once they've done, because I think it's, so you get paid your full commission after 14 payments, which is a year and 2 months, obviously. So they pay you half after 7 payments, and then the other half, basically, you know, a year and 2 months later.
And they pay you 10% commission.
I wish. That's absolutely insane. But, you know, they want to make sure that they get paid first before you do.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, they're a business. I get that.
Well, I mean, they're making you bear all their risk, right? I suppose. I'd be interested to know what if the buyer then defaulted and didn't pay anymore? Would you then not get your commission?
Ooh, there is a developer.
Because then you get the risk on you.
Small developer building something fantastic on the Palm. Big fan of what they're doing. He has a commission clawback agreement in his sales with the broker.
Yeah.
So if they don't pay, I think, and don't hold me to this, I think it's 40%. If they don't pay 40%, he can come to you and go, I want my commission back. And he's paid you that commission on 20%.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know any agent that's signing it. I think every single agent that's ever sold, and he went, yeah, you can remove that, which I think he's acquiesced. But yeah, I mean, God loves a tryer. God bless him.
No, so we've had that with leasing once. So there's one tower in Abu Dhabi, and they'll pay you half after 6 months and a whole after a year. And we're like, our work here is done. We've introduced you the tenant. They're like, well, what if the tenant, like, you know, breaks the lease? How is that my problem? Yeah. I brought you the tenant. You signed them. They might even have paid you like one check up front.
Which they probably did.
And you're going to not pay me my commission if the tenant breaks lease early, which you have to agree to anyway, because, you know, there's no break clause in the lease. Like, some people are just like off their
blockers. Did that stop you from doing business with
them? Yes.
Yeah, doesn't it?
Oh, it's ridiculous. And also, I feel really sorry, and we've spoken about this before, of agents who do deals and they're not going to get paid for a year and a bit. Stops them moving companies because they're worried about, you know, them getting their commission from the company that they left. And then you get these guys in indentured servitude, basically, where because the developers are taking so long to pay them their commission, they can't leave because then their company will not pay them or whatever it might be. So they get stuck.
You hear that a lot. Yeah. If any agent is in that loop, just leave. Just write that money off. You ain't never going to get it, because when you're waiting for that, you'll be doing other business, and you're stuck in a company that isn't appreciating you. Just
You can take them to court.
Yeah, you can, but a court case is going to cost you 25,000 dirhams, and then you're going to have a legal representative. Is going to cost you 25,000 dirhams.
Yeah, but you'll get
dirhams.
That money back. As long as, so what I would say
and
to
a year's all, worth of court cases, brokers, is it worth it? Depending on the amount.
I mean, in Abu Dhabi, the Ministry of Labour will do it for you and they'll make threatening phone calls.
Yeah,
and
they don't do that here, I don't think. Maybe they do. RERA. Yeah. RERA will get involved. Yeah. But then RERA is an advisory body, not a legal arbitrator.
What I would say to brokers.
Come on, lawyer. Ben, arbiter or arbitrator? You went to Cambridge.
They're not legal. Neither of those work.
What's the right word?
A body that can enforce something legally.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't have a... Well...
So are they an arbiter or an arbitrator?
They could open a legal case, but...
No, I'm asking about the question. Are they an... Let's say the courts, the High Courts of England, are an arbiter or an arbitrator? When they're the ones
arbiter.
Arbiter.
Yeah. Arbitration is something that doesn't have a legal standard.
Okay, so RERA are not an arbiter.
Right, yeah.
You're welcome.
But if you're a broker out there doing off plan, make sure you get evidence, independent evidence of that you did the deal. Because if you don't have that evidence, then the company can say, oh, someone else did it, and they're not going to pay you commission. So make sure that you've got evidence that you personally did that deal. Then you can leave fine and you'll get your money eventually. But a lot of companies will try and pretend that it wasn't you who did it, because often their agent won't sign the form or whatever.
This is why it's important to be a RERA registered real estate agent, because then you have all of the documentation in your name. If you are not RERA registered and you're working for a company, they can do that to you.
Yeah, it'll be in the boss's name. Anyway, any more red flags for developers?
I feel like you've got a few.
Yeah.
Any more under your belt?
It's obviously a bit of a bugbear for me. I didn't realize that. It's nice to vent.
Catharsis.
USA. Yeah. Yeah. So look out for those things in a developer. If a developer's working too hard for your business, you know, be careful. Make sure you understand.
So who are the big developers in Abu Dhabi?
So biggest is obviously Eldar, the 800-pound gorilla, I like to describe them as. Then we've got two that are merging now, Q Properties and Modon. They're going to merge Modon.
They're doing the Modon Hills thing.
Hudariat. Yeah,
Hudariat, that looks island, like it's going to be amazing.
North. Yeah, it does look cool. Very cool. And like right alongside Abu Dhabi, the locations.
Tell the folks what they're doing.
So Abu Dhabi Island, not many people know Abu Dhabi is an island, the main city is. So there's another island that runs parallel to it called Hudariat Island, and it's like just a bridge away. So that is now being fully developed into villas and apartments, and the developer is called Modon, M-O-D-O-N.
Yeah, but what are they like? More specifically.
Oh, so they built two big hills on
there
it.
There you go. They built mountains.
They built mountains, yes.
Mountains.
They're more hills. So that all of the villas that they're building on these have kind of like full panoramic sea views.
Yeah, think about the hills in LA, how everything's stacked on top of each other.
Yeah, but obviously you've got the view over Abu Dhabi, so there's water and then Abu Dhabi, and then you've got the back view, which is over more islands at the back.
So what's the most expensive view?
I'm guessing the back view is more islands and water than the Abu Dhabi view.
I'd go for the Abu Dhabi view.
Yeah.
Because you've got something to look at night. So I used to live in an apartment that just had a full sea view. And at night you'd look out and it's just black.
Inky blackness.
It's just black. Yeah, and then you'd see the odd boat kind of going past. But if you're looking back at the island, yeah, you've got something to look at all the time.
Yeah, true. And that part of Abu Dhabi is low rise as well. So it's all villas and quite a lot of greenery.
What are they going for?
It's quite nice. Yeah, that's a great question. Cheapest four bed is just over 7 million. So starting 0.7 million. They're quite big units with a decent plot size as well. It's quite a low density island. They're not really
packing
in.
What are the big ones going for? What's the one on the very top? What's that going for?
I'd be lying if I told you that I knew.
Make up a number.
40 million dirhams.
Cheap, by 11.
40 million dirhams, maybe. Absolutely no idea.
So yes, they are built. Like I was down there the other day for a friend's birthday party, and we were at this glamping site down there. And I have to say, the sea there, crystal blue. It's so beautiful. I think it's because the mangroves clean the water, right? I think that's why the water's so blue there.
No idea.
Yes, it is. Mm. Yes, it is. And yeah, what they're building is going to be very, very cool. Very cool.
Yeah, yeah. So if you're interested in that, let us know.
Have you noticed that I give Abu Dhabi glowing reviews recently? And there's nothing reciprocated.
You used to say mean things about Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, well, I'm still saying mean things. But actually, the truth be known, it's a very cool city. But you never say anything nice about Dubai.
I like Dubai.
Why? What about Dubai do you like so much, Benji?
So big.
It's like way smaller than Abu Dhabi.
Yeah.
Is it the cars? Do they frighten you?
Yeah, they do.
And the people?
Yeah, fast and colourful, the cars.
Ooh.
Yeah, and the people wear such tight suits. And where are their socks? I don't know.
Why so many tattoos? True, what's with the teeth? Cool. Thank you very much. I don't know why I shouted. I apologise if that made you jump. Thank you for joining us. I have been Barney from Dubai.
Ben from Abu Dhabi.
And catch us again next time. Thanks for joining.
Bye-bye.
Bye.